All right, everybody, welcome. We are at Las Vegas, the NFBC Las Vegas, and it's been quite the start to the trip. I guess not really start anymore, midway through this trip, but a little breakfast with Bubba this morning, Ryan. How are we liking things so far?
We are liking things. I am one of the few people in this world, I guess, who can actually say they've had breakfast with Bubba, punning on your new daily show. It was a good one too. It was short ribs Benedict. It was whatever Tito's thing you ordered.
Screwdriver, screwdriver.
Screwdriver.
Yes.
I don't normally do the cocktail stuff, but we had one of those this morning, and just walked over to the main event, and we are here, so we're having a good time.
Okay, this is the beauty of it. Everybody, Mark Whenneker over here, the legend, the legend. Hey, I'll sit over here so we can talk a little bit. So what are we thinking about your teams? You did a bunch of auctions yesterday.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the live auctions this year. I was more focused on getting the guys that I think are going to have big years and less worried about value hunting. Still, of course, did some of that, but was much more intentional this year and had more conviction in my assessment of players. And so I feel good. If I have a bad year, it's all on me. I can't blame anyone else. And
Can't blame Mager if you have a
no,
bad
I
year.
never blame Mager for a bad year, no. But this is probably our best year auctioning together. We were on the same page. The prep was great, and it was pretty seamless in auction. We each got to bid one time, and I'm not sure we've ever had such a easy time of it. Not saying the league was easy, but just us being on the same page. This was probably the best we've ever been. It took like 6, 7 years to get to that point.
Yeah, it's kind of like our podcast, Ryan. It takes a few years to figure out what the heck we want to do around here. But it was really like Mark talks about being on the same page, and it was great watching Magers in the Champions League auction, and we were both sitting there. He throws out Connor Wong at $5 flat to Crickets, and I'm like, it's a strategy. He's going there because he wants to get catcher early, cheap, affordable before it gets crazy. Then in a $1,600 down the road, separate room, Mark throws out Connor Wong for a buck because he's later in the draft trying to see if he can steal, and gets to $5, and I laugh going, man, here he goes. Was this kind of one of your guys' like plans when you talk about things?
I think Wong was our target C2 right now. We just thought in the last run of our projections, we gave him a little more playing time than had been projected, and he just kind of bubbled up as a pretty good C2. You know, with the injuries to Stevenson, to Alvarez, and to Murphy, that catcher pool really shrunk in a 15-teamer. And I'm always a big catcher, too good catcher player if I can. I didn't execute it in every draft. I think I have Bailey in one for two, but I could live with that. So yeah, that I think Wong was a target.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. We've seen a lot of they're all good players here for the most part, but we're seeing the trend where you don't want to be stuck waiting on catcher too much. Some do. The guy that sat next to you last night, forgive me, I forgot his name. He ended up getting Drake Baldwin and another young catcher at the end, and he was cool with,
Augustin.
yeah, Augustin Ramirez of the Marlins. So any other takeaways from your squad? It's been pretty cool watching you in person after talking to you and some other things. Like, well, even at breaks, you guys would reconvene in the halls to kind of see how things were going and stuff like that.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I think a few people commented that we were fairly demonstrative in our nonverbals when the closer prices just kept hitting 22, which kept like,
which was happening all day.
I think I was hand waving every time. So yeah, I'm not trying to like hide any tells necessarily, but I think we had our best like nonverbals, like just the bidder just quickly giving a glance, and the wingman just kind of a gentle nod, or just kind of not even looking at that person, just to kind of give away. No, it was really great. Bubba was, I checked in with him a couple times on a few late picks, which was really helpful. I mean, your knowledge of the player pool and the players is amazing, and it really helped me to get another perspective in my solo. So appreciate you. It was, I think, Johnny DeLuca. We were debating whether it should go a dollar in auction. I decided to go for Cronenworth, just a little more solid across the board, and then got DeLuca in the third round in the reserve. So that worked out perfect for me.
Yeah, it's always really weird when basically one of the best auction players in the game comes up to me
Coming
sitting there
to you.
with
It's
the
like,
with, you
what?
know, drinking a few Coronas throughout the day, going, "Yeah, you want to know what my thoughts on our Johnny DeLuca?" But I do appreciate it. It's kind of flattering in that regard. But that kind of sums up my role around here these days. But any other thoughts? As it's been awesome, like I said, check like watching all these guys right now. Like, it's mainly auction day on Friday. It's main event now. I'll have some auctions later. It's just cool seeing stuff we like talk about. We see screenshots on social media and everything, but to see the art in form is a different animal.
Well, I love seeing you two here. The content you're putting out is incredible, and it's just a huge part of the game. And what I love is when I first started here in 2012, and my live event, I think maybe it was 2016, I was one of the younger players, kind of an unknown, and now I'm at least known. I'm not saying I'm like a great player.
You are well known.
I mean, people at least.
Poker has a posse following. People who are not here.
No, but it's amazing seeing the different like generations. Like, you know, the OGs are here, and then you have. I met two guys at the MTM party last night who parlayed a $500 OLAC win into a main event. I mean, that just gave me like such a good feeling that this hobby will continue on. We have a lot of new players. So now you have guys from their 70s down to like the 20s. So, you know, you have to keep growing the game. You know, it can't just be the same people all the time. So hopefully this new generation, and I think the work you two do really helps bring in new players. And yeah, you know, I want to play this for a lot longer. So you need some new players to keep that going.
Yeah, that was Jeff and Nick, listeners of the show last night. They're pretty pumped on that. I said, you got to go talk to Mark over if you like what auctions. But to your point about the youth, it is good to see because that's been like a thing. And in the Champions League, Greg made a point to mention, I think 12 out of the 15 were like 41 years or younger. So there's only one person over 60 in the draft, which stood out when you think about it. Because like you said, Mark, is when we look at especially the higher stakes rooms like this, at least in the past, you see pictures and you're thinking, okay, it's, you know, there's not a lot of youth entering the room. But today when you walk around, there's 8 main events going on right now, and it's very spread out, I would say.
Absolutely. We're in a good place. We see this in First Pitch Arizona, too.
Right? Yeah.
There's a lot of new folks. Right. And it was cool. I mean, I was sitting last night, not to – name drop or anything, but I was talking to Lindy Hinkleman for a long time last night in the MTM suite, and just like, so talking to people that are new to the game, but talking to Lindy, who's obviously been around, it's been pretty damn entertaining weekend.
I mean, Lindy is just a legend. I mean, this guy is incredible. He's such a sweet guy. He's so genuine, and he's still a great player. And that was one of the things I first noticed when I started, was like, you know, you get to rub shoulders with the best in this particular game. You know, I always think of the World Series of Poker and, you know, main event, you know, you get to see, you know, the Helmuse and the Negron who's here. It's the Hinklemans, it's the Jupinkas. I mean, so in our game, like those guys are the ones you look up to, and everyone gets an equal chance. You know, you put your money in, you sit down next to the guys and you see how it goes. There's no other barrier to entry other than time, money, and kind of a dedication to it. So I think that's really cool.
Yep, it's going to be a blast, and I'm looking forward to drafting a 1600 next year, and hopefully you're not in the room, but there's a good chance you will be. So I guess we'll figure that out another date and time, because our strategy seemed to align this year, which is kind of scary going into next season possibly.
Well, I think, Well, thank you for having me on before, and thanks for having me on right now. It's great to see you guys, and, you know, safe trip back.
Hey, enjoy the dead at the Sphere tonight.
You got it. Thank you. That's
right. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it. Mark Winokur, everybody, just legend in the game of, if he's not a Hall of Famer yet, he will be someday. There's zero question about that. That pretty much just sums up the fun we were having here. It's just,
we can go off script, we can go off the rails, and who would have thought, well, maybe this is predictable given our show and your preferences, that Connor Wong would be brought up before Shane McClanahan.
That's fair. That's fair. Well, to be fair, if Mark didn't walk down there, this would not have happened. But I'll let you roll with Shane O'Mac, because this happened during Breakfast with Bubba today, and it got interesting.
All right, it's pretty on brand, by the way, that we bring up Connor Wong before we even talk about really the story of the day, right? Which was Shane McClanahan. Right when we left Breakfast with Bubba, checked my phone, walking over to Park MGM. I remember showing you the tweet or whatever from Underdog saying that he left the game with an arm. I think so. That happened like at right at like 11:44 is when we saw that. Or sorry, 10:44, and the draft starting at 11. So most people knew. Obviously, we knew when the drafts were going on. I feel like most people knew. You could kind of see around the rooms. There were, you know, conversations like, hey, it looks like McClanahan is out. People showing each other their phones and whatnot. But it was interesting, like, not everyone knew. And it only takes one in every draft. And I think pretty much in every draft, like typically 8th or 9th round, something like that, we would see Shane McClanahan get drafted. And it's interesting, like half the table kind of cringe. And then it's really interesting, like during the first break, right after the first 10 rounds, then you kind of see the people that took McClanahan that didn't know, they kind of find out in real time. So that was absolutely wild to see, just given the timing that the news broke.
Yeah, there's 8 mains going on right now. And it's all but one. He's gone as high as 715 at the end of round seven. Yeah, he could be going anywhere. The latest I saw him go was one round 10. It's pretty much been everywhere else, though. So, yeah, it's pretty much all over the board, which is pretty wild in this one. And, yeah, it's going to be one of those that didn't look good. I know I would not be – well, I was already out to begin with for you listeners that know, but it doesn't bode well. And I really don't think there's anywhere I'd be willing to draft him personally.
Agreed. And so you just – yeah, you hope for the best. But, yeah, he was – you hate to say he was a fade, but he was. All right. I don't know. Let's talk about, too, just like – I don't know how much you all care about this, but like the weekend in general, we got in what early Friday, tired, went right over to MGM, hung out, did some drafts, checked in at our luscious Airbnb.
Luscious is one way to put it, that's for sure.
And got back, looked at all the auctions, and went out last night to the Mike the Mouth MTM suite party last night. And got to bed by midnight.
Dude,
it's not bad.
Best 7 hours of sleep I've had in a long time.
We had to make the call. It was about 11:45, right?
Yeah.
Midnight Madness draft was about to start. We looked at each other and we were like, we're either leaving now, and we've been awake since 3 a.m. We're either leaving now or this draft starts and we're not leaving for 2 more hours. And in our old, wise age, we decided to bail.
Yeah, I was pretty proud of us. It helped that a bunch of the room was leaving, and we avoided the next herd that came out of the clown car before that. Otherwise, we might not have. But all in all, it was pretty good stuff. Another takeaway I wanted to bring up, Ryan, and it was kind of a conversation point yesterday, and I was wondering, would Garrett Crochet enter the first round? Like we always talk about starting pitching getting pushed up. We knew Skeens and Skubal would get theirs. Well, we only had one first-round share of Garrett Crochet at pick 1.12. I'll say his name, Rob DiPietro, threw that one out there. The rest went early round two, though. I don't think anybody went past 2.5 when it came to Crochet. So he's the clear number three, but he's one round one Crochet.
Yeah, and early second in a lot of spots that I saw. So Crochet, I think, kind of was the poster boy for some of this Vegas main event helium. We're starting to see that. I think another starting pitcher that is really starting to get pushed up is Spencer Strider.
Yep.
I talked to a few folks who have the number one pick. Actually, just walked past Jason. Saying he was thinking about. Did you do it? I don't think he did it. He didn't take Strider at the 2-3.
Did you take Strider or no?
At the 2-3?
Okay. No, he didn't. Okay. Right. Well, we'll talk about
the 2-3 turn, but did not happen. Spencer Strider's going pretty much consensus 4th, 5th round.
The latest I saw him go was mid round five. He went at the beginning of round 4-1. It's pretty much middle round 4 to middle round 5. You're going to get Spencer Strider off the board, which is still almost a round to round and a half behind DeGrom everywhere. And the latest Strider news had Strider potentially coming back mid-April. So, like, seriously, I know most people are going to be done drafting, but just I figured with the news and the helium that would go up, but like we talked about it yesterday, even in the auctions, Strider was going for like $20, give or take, in most auction drafts. Like, people are still worried about Strider. They weren't worried about McClanahan, but they're worried about Strider, which is pretty crazy to think about.
Yeah, in hindsight, pretty wild. Pretty wild. I don't know if we want to go talk auctions or the mains. Well, we'll stick with the mains. The closer, the topic of closers has been big while we've been out here. I remember talking to Scott Gemstead yesterday before the main. He's got the 13th pick, was mapping things out. And basically he was saying, and I totally agree, he was saying if he doesn't take a closer by like the 3-4, by his 3-4 turn, again, late third, early fourth, just was very concerned about which closers he would be coming back to him. And that has turned out to be the case. Like, we are not seeing closers going past the 5th round. And so pretty much, and actually we're seeing new faces in that closer run. We're seeing Jeff Hoffman. We're seeing Tanner Scott go in that 5th, 6th round. And so the top 8 that we've talked about is almost like a top 10 with Scott and Hoffman going 5th, 6th round in a lot of drafts. So it's the closer inflation, I think, has been a bigger story than the starting pitcher inflation, which there's been a little bit of that. But the closer inflation has been wild. Everyone is trying to get one of those top 8, 10 closers, and they're doing it. In order to do it, you've got to do it by the 5th round.
Yeah, I'd say you're right on that one. Like, the starting pitching market, it feels like for the most part, is it's still heavy, but it hasn't changed as much. It's still like it's a heavy 3, 4, 5 round. I mean, we were still getting that over there. Yeah, Crochet went up, but he was still at least a mid-round 2 guy before you got Gilbert behind him. So that's kind of stayed the same. But to your point with the closers, I think the Japan series with Tanner Scott was big. Kirby Yates not getting the save.
Kirby Yates not getting, yes. Yep. Kirby Yates not get pitching the 8th in the second game.
That was big. So you got those kind of situations. And then, and again, I know we're not, you want to focus on mains, but I was just going to highlight, Mark mentioned it in the auctions. Like, majority of those elite closers were going over $20. Majority. Like, you, yeah. 18 at the cheapest. So it wasn't just listener leagues, folks. Like, closers were getting piped up. That's for sure. But yeah, the closing carousel continues. I was actually talking to, I think it was, Bubba Shucker in the DM. Larry, we were talking to him. I was talking to him during the break, and he was going to try to get his second closer at the start of round 11 to avoid the late round madness, basically.
Yep.
We'll see how that turns out later. I think we have a consensus 1-2. I think we always had a consensus 1-2, but today pretty much locked that in, Ryan. The first 6 drafts we saw, it was Shohei. Then we walked across the room, and there was the 2 Witt shares. So it's been It's been Shohei and Witt 1-2.
They can't be 100% right in these main event drafts, you know? We'll stick with 80%.
They're like 20% right, is what it is. And then Judge is basically the third also. So it's pretty much a consensus top 3 is what it came down to. But no surprise.
One caveat to that is there is a league that I just walked in on where Aaron Judge went 6th.
Whoa, I missed that one.
James Anderson actually had the 6th pick, and Aaron Judge fell to him. Corbin Carroll went 3rd in that draft.
I'm going to have to go back and check that because that's a tough table.
Yes.
Over there. They all are.
I'm not saying bad pick, whatever. It's just these things can change. And I was just talking to James during the break. He was like, we were planning on taking Carroll at 6. And when he went 3rd, it was like, damn, we got to pivot. But that's then it was Ellie Tucker. And then they got Aaron Judge fell in their lap. So like, you still never know.
Like, real talk, because this could pertain to the end season. Anything can happen. Why would not just the number 3 pick, but the 4 and the 5? Why are they passing on Judge?
Well, he's going 3rd.
I'm just trying to like wrap my head around what, like, hey, he hit his first spring home run this morning.
I almost wonder if you have the 4th or 5th pick, you're not even thinking about Judge.
No.
You just want, I'm building around Ellie. I'm building around Kyle Tucker, whatever.
I was thinking, do I want Ellie? Do I want Tucker or J-Ram is basically what I would be thinking it for.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm not saying they don't know, they obviously know Corbin Carroll got taken 3rd, but they decided not to go Judge. So, just crazy. Like, in every single board you walk around, that's the beauty of these main events. It's literally walking into these separate rooms. Like, we've got true MVP of the morning, by the way. We've got a guy getting a neck massage.
Yes.
In the middle of the main event draft, which was new.
That's a Vegas thing, though, because if you go to the tables upstairs, you'll see guys get massaged. Like, I've gotten a back massage at the Aria a couple years back at a blackjack table.
Literally. He's right over there getting massaged.
The entire draft so far, folks. Like, we're in round probably 15. We can't see the board from here, but we walked in round 4, and it was going. It was on.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Shout out to that guy.
Yeah, more power to him. Hopefully, at worst, he's winning in something. So that's good. I wanted to mention Mookie Betts. Okay. We talked about, like, everyone's worried about the weight loss. We saw Kyber Ruiz. We saw Betts going for around $20 on Friday. He was locked into round 2. I don't think I saw a round 1 Mookie Betts today, unless I missed that somehow. But I tried to make note of that everywhere I went. He's locked into round 2, it feels like, and sometimes middle of round 2. So that's one of those. You could have got like a Soto Betts combo, which is pretty wild to think about.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Betts is falling. People that put their money on the line are quite concerned about it.
And I guess, talking to people here, it is the illness. And not just the illness, but I think we have like Kieber Ruiz hangover syndrome, if we want to call it that, where, right, dude loses 20 pounds, he's back, but basically his first half was torpedoed. And who knows if that's the case with Mookie Betts. I am all over that. You know me. I mean, I'm
Bloomfield would be like salivating at the table if he had like the 10th pick and he sees Betts still on the board. Yeah. Like, whoa, this is the best thing
you would,
ever.
You would take a second round Mookie, wouldn't you? You don't even like the guy, but come on.
Probably.
Yeah.
Well, like, okay, well, here's a fun, like, what if, because Tatis is dropping a ton, would you? Yeah. I'm pretty, like, that's been a more interesting thing to me because Tatis technically isn't hurt. We all know the concerns we got with Tatis, but again, the people putting the money on the line over here, not always right, but at least they're backing it. A lot of Tatis decline is what I'll say.
Yep, he's been falling, and I don't know. I mean, we've been both saying he's the first rounder we wouldn't.
Yeah, he's my first round bust in
we
theory.
Wouldn't take, so I don't know. Could very well be wrong. Couple other notes I've got. My guy is now everyone's guy, Christopher Sanchez. Walking around the rooms here, pretty much consensus, like seventh round pick in these 15 teamers. So that is roughly, I can't do math. I've been in Vegas for 2 days. My brain doesn't work.
Six times 12. What is 72?
Six times 12. It's 15 team league.
So yeah, so I can't do math either.
So right around pick 100. Right around pick 100, Christopher Sanchez is going, which is crazy, I think. I don't even know if I would do that, but that's the going rate. It's based on, I mean, I've always loved Christopher Sanchez. It's just, are we buying into, we've seen this play out, are we buying into the spring velocity rise? You and I have said in the Discord, it's like, I actually don't want to see that, but I don't know if this is a new Christopher Sanchez and you get the ground ball rate, you get the floor, but now you also have higher velocity and you get the strikeouts. This could be like a gem. So I don't know. You're paying for a lot of that to happen in the seventh round, but that's where these folks are willing to take Christopher Sanchez.
Yeah, there's helium and then there's a rocket ship. And he's on the rocket ship right now, which is pretty wild stuff. I have to do it. I'm going to talk catchers here for a minute.
Jesus. All right. I'll be right back. I'm going to talk to look around. So look at some boards.
I wanted to reiterate how interesting it is. Like, William Contreras locked in number two. He went in round three in one draft. 3.4 in one draft. He went as high as 2-1 on the turn in one draft.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, when the turn. That's why I wanted to bring this up. See, it's not all just about me, but the 2-1 turn was pretty impressive. But then what stood out to me more is it was like a two-round gap, and then it was always some kind of combination of Wilson, Adley, and Yiner. And it was never the same order, maybe a couple drafts, but you know what I'm trying to say. Like, it was always mixed up, but always once one went, by the end of that round, they were gone. So, like, it's a clear four, but more often than not, Wilson's moving into, like, that number two conversation, which is interesting.
Did you also see, you know, we're just kind of spitballing here, very, very accomplished player yesterday in the auctions took Wilson, Contreras, and Yiner Diaz, I think at a total of like $49 in one of the auctions. And you were just like,
did I see it? I shed a tear.
You were on cloud nine.
I shed a tear. It was amazing.
Jesus.
Especially if you guys knew who this player was. Like, it was absolutely glorious. Anything else? I got a couple more, but I'll let you have the floor on this one.
So you all heard my Freddie Freeman rant the last show. Not really around the ankle, but just this hidden rib injury. Oh, by the way, I tore cartilage in my rib in the postseason last year. Now it hurts again. Kind of got that this weekend again with my guy Sonny Gray. Oh, by the way, I had a pain injection in my forearm. As Jake Hallisker walks by.
Just laughing, going, yep.
Confidant of Dr. Dave. We get the Sonny Gray news. Actually next to Dr. Dave when that happened. So that was entertaining to find out about. But Sonny Gray, yeah, the casual news that, oh, I got a pain injection in my forearm at the end of last season. Velocity's down this spring. Got shelled on Friday. He's been going, at least in the couple drafts that I've saw, around eighth or ninth round. I'm concerned. I don't know if I would go Sonny Gray in the eighth or ninth at this point, knowing what we don't know and what could be next for Sonny Gray. Maybe it's just fine. Sonny Gray, for what it's worth, says he's not hurt. The injury's behind him. He's just ramping up. But I don't know if you would go for an eighth or ninth round Sonny at this point.
Nah, I'm pretty much out. When I hear the forearm injury, we saw it finished. Now the injection part getting destroyed in the spring training. I'm just going to pass on that. There's a lot of pockets of pitchers we like in that range. I'll take my chances elsewhere. Like, I take Gray over McClanahan, obviously, but I'm not going to take either. To your point about injured guys also, I saw one Spencer Steer share in the first 10 rounds. Someone took that chart. Right. He went
IL news this morning, right?
Officially was that put yesterday? On the, this morning, Saturday morning. Okay. Officially placed on the IL. We all kind of saw it coming, but there's still no clear timetable for that return. The only other thing I really made a point here was Jackson Chourio locked into the first round in most of these drafts. He has got locked in. If he's not in the first round, he's one of the first couple picks in the second round. He is, yeah, definitely. I know our buddy Jeff Erickson took him with his first pick. He's pick 15 in round one. He's definitely getting some serious love there as well.
Was going, I want to say, low 30s in the auctions yesterday. So that
there were some drafts where I saw the price and I got like frisky. I wanted to jump in and be like, I wanted to scream, bid more. Nothing like the Kyle Tucker at 32 we saw. That was erroneous.
Jesus.
That was erroneous.
That was in the Champions League, which I guess we didn't talk about that, but the Champions League auction, which is...
I mean, a whole set of notes on those.
For those who aren't familiar with the Champions League, just super quick, this is the top 15 folks from last year who did the best in a combination of three drafts, your draft champions, your draft and hold, a 12-teamer, and a 15-team main event. So the top 15 all do an auction. They did it Friday at 4 o'clock. It was really cool. Phil Dassault made jerseys for everybody with names on the back and their pick number and all that stuff. Very, very cool event. The NFBC, I mean, the details that they put together for some of the leagues is awesome. But just sitting in that draft was interesting. And, yeah, I just wanted to scream Kyle Tucker, 33, when he went for $32. So that was interesting. I also got to be in the Champions League. That's breaking news, right?
Yeah, you got to help Toby with some stuff, so that was interesting.
Toby had to run to the bathroom and needed a
phone,
so I just sit there.
I'm on the phone. Ryan's on the computer. I'm on the phone telling stuff, and yeah, that was a whole nother thing.
He didn't give me his jersey, but I...
No, he'll give you a thread. All right, we got another guest, I think, joining us here, folks.
If you have time, Drew.
Yeah, if
of course. Yeah, always.
The one and only Drew Forte. Drew, how we doing, man? How's the Vegas experience going?
It's been great. It's a wonderful community. I don't do a ton of drafts here. I do 1750 OC, but I come just to meet all the great people that are part of this NFBC community, do some drafts, share some stories, and you get to talk about your teams and guys you like. It's people who actually want to hear that stuff. So it's been a blast. How's your first Vegas experience been?
Absolutely loving it. It's been crazy. We've been kind of talking about it earlier. The biggest thing is it's just, like you said, meeting everybody, seeing how things go. It's different. It's a lot of 15s. There are the 12s, the 750s, but a lot of 15s. So you're a man of the 12s. I'm pretty much a man of the 12s. So it's a little different vibe.
We were just talking with Drew about how the debate we're saying, and I'm screwing this up, but we are talking main event today. So I'm saying rounds, but Drew was just... I want to say complaining, saying how he likes for when podcasters say the actual pick number as opposed to the round they're going into to tip our caps to the 12s out there. And I made fun of him for being a 12 guy. But
and don't let Drew fool you. Was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago now that you were the OC overall champion? Yeah.
2 years ago, 2023.
Okay. So, yeah, he's pretty good at this, folks. So, how's draft season going for you? I know it's wrapping up. I think you're done, you said? You're done? So, yeah.
I'm done. I have one home league left next week, right before opening day. It's been going well. I drafted earlier this year than I have in the past. I did a couple DCs for the first time, way to kind of fill that void in January, early February. It's going well. I think you draft earlier, I really start to see the players move up in ADP and tried to be not regret not following those guys up ADP. The Clay Holmes, the Christopher Sanchez's, Grant Holmes, guys like that not getting anchored into, hey, I was drafting them in round 20 a couple weeks ago. Now I have to pay two rounds higher, if I'm still in, getting those shares. So it's been a good draft season. We'll see how the teams turn out and getting ready for Fab. The first Fab is Sunday night. So
like almost 24 hours away. It's like, it's so close. It's pretty crazy.
We're planning to do Fab from the airport tomorrow. So that's
going to be a sight to see. It might be for the Patreon. We'll see. But, Drew mentioned a name there, and I keep every draft I've watched, every auction, live draft, whatever, I've been waiting to see the helium because you mentioned the Christopher Sanchez helium, and we talked about it right before you got here. That's been real. Grant Holmes.
He's
not climbing, dude. Not as much as I expected, though.
So like, I think we were sitting next to each other. He just went in the – this has kicked off the round versus pick debate, I think, because we were trying to calculate –
the start of round – the second?
Went at the start of round 14 in one of the mains that we were watching.
Yeah, he's going to get the calculator out.
No, we tried to calculate. It was bad. We were sitting next to – Toby's like, what pick number is that?
Pick 210, round
210. So yeah. 20 minutes later, we finally have the answer. But Grant Holmes, at least say, who knows, one league, whatever. it was starting to go in like the 14th, with which in the 15 teamers that I've been in, it's been like 19th, 20th.
It is 19th. So, the 12s haven't moved a ton. Like, I don't know, where did he roughly go, if you remember, in your 750?
I picked him, and I picked
what
him.
What pick number, by the way?
he's using the calculator. 18 times 12, like around 210-ish.
That's still pretty good.
I was picking at the end, pick 11, yeah. So there was a chance he could make it all the way around 20-plus picks, but that's my big money draft of the year, so I'm a fan, and I wanted to make sure I didn't risk losing him in a draft of good drafters. So, and I think today Victor Scott is the guy.
Is he moving?
Yeah.
That's
I've
a good call.
A lot of round 17, which is pick.
See, we
have 260. So
when we're done with Drew, we're going to go and look at what we've missed since we started talking, and we'll come back and do some more. But that's interesting. So that'll be a takeaway. We're going to, because he went deep again on Friday. I think Siani might have gotten sent down, or he's close to getting sent down. And if Siani goes, then it's Victor Scott's world, and we're living in it. We'll see how that goes, but that's interesting.
Yeah, I think he's obviously, everybody was so high on him last year and the big fab bids early, and obviously he didn't pan out, and I think there's a little bit, the spring training has been strong and not, the Cato walk has been strong. He's chipped in a couple homers, and we know the speed is there, and he's one of the players who can be a real game changer, and we know he has the talent. So it's one of those guys, hey, if you were in last year and he's had a strong spring, there's a reason to try to be in this year and, capitalize.
And forgive me if I'm jumping here, Ryan, but while we have Drew, a guy that's been successful in the OC format, again, it's different than 12s, and he mentioned something, and he's mentioned it a few times, Fab. I just want to ask, do you have any tips for the listeners? Because, the hard part about this is we're recapping a draft. Most people are done drafting. So I was like, we can talk strategy all we want. It's kind of out the window. But we're moving towards in season now. So, what do you do? Because everyone's got their own way to create fab. And, in 12s, the joke I always make, and most agree with, it is the Wild West, because every league is so different.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think, honestly, what I need to start looking at is I drafted a few of the OCs starting in mid-February through now. And the teams that I drafted earlier around the beginning of spring training, I wasn't as much looking at early season and maybe where some of the matchups or, where there's maybe some good streaming hitter options, good schedules. I didn't have your Friday podcast to rely on.
So, checks in the mail.
Yep. So it's going to be for those early teams, looking at those early season pitching matchups, the early season streaming hitters and the guys who weren't drafted. There's some of these guys who have now moved up the board who weren't drafted, and really trying to go through that process, figure out where I can churn and burn and get the at-bats and get the key situation. So that's what I'm going to spend later tonight and definitely a lot of tomorrow. And honestly, going through, I draft a lot of Jesus Sanchez, and it seems like he's going to be out for quite a while, it seems, maybe all of April. So as much as I love him, I think he's a guy that I'm going to look at on the chopping block, because in a 12 team, I think he's not somebody worth holding on to for a month. So it's going to be stuff like that, going through and seeing where the red suitcases are and if I want to keep those guys or move on from them.
I have Jesus Sanchez in the 1OC that I drafted, and I was actually curious if you think that's a drop in a 12. I think it is. So one thing I want to look at once we go back in there, look at these, is kind of true to what you said. I think people in these last few rounds are going to be drafting streamers, right? So, and we actually saw that in some of the auctions yesterday where, and again, this is an NFBC-centric rule, but, it has fab repercussions where, you're the Japan guys, your Birdie, your Vesia, Landon Knack, they were going, in reserve rounds. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you're considering that for fab, it's kind of what we were saying on our fab preview show on Tuesday. I wouldn't go crazy for these guys. I think I said 10 or 12 bucks is what I've roughly got them down for fab. So don't go nuts with it there. But it's a good point, Drew. Your mindset change from drafting to now fabbing is, starting to look at those schedules, starting to look at those matchups. That Tyler Anderson Chicago White Sox stream, you live or die by that thing. But yeah, that's the mindset change we got to make starting right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you draft early, so many things can happen. When a draft in late February versus now, that you can look at the schedule a little bit, but so much can happen. It's better to maybe play the long game and then fine tune because the injuries will find you or guys won't win jobs that you expected to in the late rounds. And that's those late round picks are fungible. You know, you hope they pay off. You hope they turn into the superstars and, you know, the guys you're drafting second round next year like Jackson Merrill. But, you know, most of the time they're lottery tickets. They won't work out and you move on.
Well, we might chat with you more later, but I kind of want to go look at the boards and go see where we're at and get some more. But appreciate you joining me, man.
Yeah.
It's always fun talking with you, getting to meet you this year. That's been one of the highlights for me this whole time is, you know, I've done so many shows. Ryan's done so many drafts and shows, like getting to meet all these guys like that we've chatted with in the past. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, absolutely. If anybody is interested, I think it's a great opportunity. Last year was my first time coming to Vegas for this. I think there's so many great players and great personalities that are approachable and love to talk fantasy baseball, baseball, life. And I think that's really great, you know, just a whole community of people that you can share an interest with. And, you know, whether you're doing one draft or you're doing a half dozen out here, you know, it's fun just to have the experience and, you know, just take it all in because we all love playing fantasy baseball and it's cool being able to match, you know, faces to voices that I hear online and introduce myself and just chat. So I'm glad you guys made it. Hopefully, you know, we all can come back next year, maybe do a few drafts together and maybe some more OCs. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's the plan. That's the plan.
Appreciate it, man. Wait, 30 seconds. 30 seconds with Mike Lozada.
Oh,
hold on. We are live, Mike, on a podcast, so you can curse, whatever. Awesome party last night. Thanks for having us.
It was great to see you guys here for the first time. Everything's fun. Having a good time?
Yeah, we're having a great time. A lot of it thanks to you last night. That was a blast. And he's one of the best genuine people you'll meet, no matter what I say about him elsewhere. No, I'm just kidding. He's a great guy.
Did I miss it on the show?
No. No. It was great. I'm Bubba. Yeah.
Tim
Lilly. Nice. Pleasure to meet you, Tim. Of course,
people. Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow.
Oh, right.
Yeah. We'll see, you guys tomorrow. See, next time you have me on, you have to remember it's priority. No, nobody cuts in when I'm on the show.
Well, we're going to try to chat with him some more later.
Yeah, it's I'll come back on at the end.
He's had his second break. He's got to get some lunch.
Yeah, I got to get some lunch, but I can't let you know how I won the overall on the break. I'm going to get back. But good to see you guys.
Awesome, man. Thanks for having good luck the rest of the day. All right, guys. We'll be back later. We're going to go check out some more boards, go check in on some people. It's break time, break round two, and we'll have some more for you shortly. Thanks. All right. Drafts are wrapping up here. Main event drafts are wrapping up here for the league winner, Mike the Mouth, telling us what's up. But drafts are wrapping up here. 8 main event leagues in Las Vegas, Nevada. Ryan, how are we enjoying seeing this unfold?
Well, I just cracked open the first. I told you I'd be right back, get a water, and then somehow, I don't know, it's turned into a Corona with lime. So we're doing that to kick off the afternoon. But I think we want to take this. We'll talk to people once they're going to start to leave the room in a little bit here. But I think the main takeaway from like these last 10 rounds after the second break, which was catered with lunch, by the way, which is also awesome from the NFBC, is looking at these last 10 rounds of 15 teamers in these mains, kind of like we talked about on Tuesday, where it's almost like a fab ranking list for some of these guys. And we can talk about individual players and whatnot. But I think for you all, kind of listening, consuming where these boards are in the main events, it's fun to look at. And we talked about some of the early, you know, the risers and the early round trends. But like you said, Bubba, like we're past draft strategy point. And I think if you're going to look at main event boards and some of these picks, focus on the last 10 rounds. Who were the guys rising where some of these NFBC players are taking in rounds 20, 21, 22, even 26, whatever? Are those guys available on Fab? Because that's almost your de facto Fab ranking list.
Yeah, and we'll go through a couple that I wrote down. Not meaning it's the gospel by any means, but some that are hanging around round 20, as Ryan said. Some creep like as high as 18, but 18 to 21, give or take. So these are people that might be available if you drafted early, like if you drafted an OC and you have 5 guys on the IL. These are guys you could look to target type situations. But Casey Mize, who Ryan has been very, very high on, he's creeped in as high as 18. And Bubba Chandler is getting a ton of love up to 19 or 20. And I think the Bubba Chandler one especially is important for a couple reasons. But, hey, here we go. Wrapped up his draft.
He's back again?
He's here.
Want more of this?
He's here to gloat about his winning team. So, Mike, the floor is yours. How are we feeling?
Feeling good, boys. So I'm the last guest, right? Because there's no top in this.
We will kick you out. We will kick you out in due time. But for now, you know, we got no one else here, so we
end the podcast.
Yeah.
So how was it? Yeah, it's great.
We were just talking, Mike, about the last. Like, if people are listening to us, they look at these boards. They don't care who we take in the first 10 rounds, whatever. They're looking at Fab for Sunday night. Who are some of your late round guys, like round 20, 30, that you took at the end that are like, or guy either that you took or guys that you were like, oh shit, I got sniped and I didn't get. Who were some of those names?
Actually, I didn't get sniped too much in this draft. I feel it was very comfortable, worked out really well. And sometimes, you know, you sit between the right guys, you know, and you're not getting killed.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you guys like, I said, I got guys like Bassett late, 26 round, Zebby Matthews, people like that. Tyler Kinley could be the closer in the 30th round. Why not, you know, at that point? So it was all in all, like I said, one of those ones you feel good about. Wasn't happy seeing about Vinny P pulling up lame after I took him in the 9th. So hopefully he's all right. But, you know, I was so happy I had voided. I saw all these guys pick injured guys. They weren't watching the news. You know, and then of course I'm all happy, and then of course I get Pasquantino at the end of the thing. So
yeah, about 5 minutes before we started, I saw the Vinny P news, and I'm like, we got most of the news before the draft. Some guys still decided to take McClanahan and stuff. We talked about that earlier. The Vinny P one was one of like the big ones in middle of the draft. Nothing you can do about it. You're not alone in that one.
Yeah.
But what I want to ask you is, because when we went to the party last night, you had the draft board from New Jersey up. How does this draft compare to your New Jersey draft? Like, how do you feel? Like, which one do you like better? What I guess, overall thoughts on the team?
Well, look, they're completely different kinds of drafts. I was in the 15 hole there. But, you know, obviously, Shane McClanahan, you know, I had from McClanahan in that one. You know, what was really cool about that was I had with Ray late. But some of these guys, even in a week, you see a massive jump, you know, and just from New Jersey to Vegas. So, as I said, you know, we're all going to have people lost Schreider last year and they finished in the top. You know, whatever. So it can happen. You can lose a guy. You don't want to start off with too many of those guys. But yeah. So I mean, this is a completely different. I love the New Jersey team. I love that everything was great there. This team solid as well. You know, went to table prepared. You start drafting in September like I do. You know, you're pretty much on the player pool, and you can, you know, zig and zag as you have to as things go along. You
What's your take on the closers? We talked about closers earlier on. Like basically, they're all gone by the 5th round. You took in the Jersey draft. You took 3 and 4.
Yeah, well, I was at the end, so I took a double tap to the cheers of all in attendance. I did, we had a lot of people watch. I took the New York closers, so back-to-back. So we had Edwin Diaz and Devin Williams there. And this one, I just took Hoffman and filled it in with guys like Chris Martin and who else I had in this one. I'm just trying to think who else. I'm drawing a blank. He's such a memorable closer, the other one. I took Urseg, your guy, because, you know, we all know Carlos Estevez is not keeping that job. As well, and then, you know, through Kinley in the end. So I'm sure I'll come up with a second closer. You want to get one rock solid one there, and that's the way it worked out. So
yeah, especially in a 15, you got to get the one rock solid and pencil it in from there, so you can go.
Yeah.
They'll play the wire. Are you done drafting for the season? Is this it?
I'm not done drafting for the season. I will go back, and if I can, I have my online main, CLQ main, if I can get into one. I haven't looked at it all weekend, and I'm just like, where am I going to draft? I don't think I can draft on the times that are available. And I have my OC. I have my online OC for the CLQ as well, and that's it. I'll be doing that leading into the season. But yeah, man, it's like exhausting. It's like doing all the stuff that I do, and the Jersey events were huge. They were great, huge success. Vegas, the party, as you saw, that's what it's all about. That's, you know, it's been going almost 10 years now. It's a blast putting all that together, drafting a Midnight Madness draft just for the Carter Gill experience alone. And people were extra drunk this year, and you know, so. It was a fun time. Just do that. And you got to do it. You got to power through. It's Vegas. You know? So.
2 minutes with you? Can we do two minutes with you?
All right. Yeah. Waving people down as they go by.
Up to you. You can wait.
Oh, Dennis, that was in my draft. That was a train wreck.
Oh, he was in your draft. He was in your draft.
He was team 30. Train wreck.
Wow.
Train wreck.
Okay.
So
let's get him over. I didn't know you guys were in the same
draft. He'll tell you all about that.
We'll bring Scott Johnstead over here. we'll just grab a couple minutes of your time, Scott. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I remember we were talking. It's the first time I met you. Mike, thanks for stopping by. Thanks for everything. How you doing, man? We have podcasted together a couple times.
Yep.
Finally got to meet you yesterday. Ton of fun. We were talking about you had the 13th pick.
Yes.
And we were talking about kind of your draft strategy. You wanted to start hitter, and you took – how did it start out?
I wanted hitter. Just there's like the stretch in like that 4th to 6th round. I don't like a lot of the hitters, so I thought I'd go a lot of pitching there. So I wanted to go hitter. I think the hitters fall off pretty good. I was going to take Julio or Tatis. Ended up getting both of them. I was pretty happy with that. You know, bunch of speed, bunch of power. So you just kind of start that way. And
yep.
Crochet got kind of bumped up a couple picks. So that's why I pushed a couple guys down. Lindor went pretty early. Betts went. I was a little worried about Mookie because the health thing. I thought he was going to be pick 18, which is my second pick. And I didn't know if I was going to do it.
Yeah.
So I was happy not to make the decision.
Third and fourth round, you were saying, we were talking yesterday, it was almost a requirement to get one closer. You were thinking about two.
I was.
And I was trying to talk you out of it. I don't know. You ended up with one, right?
I ended up with one. I just thought that, you know, if you're picking the second half, that was kind of your advantage, was that group of like six or seven or eight, like if you want to call them premium closers. But yeah. A couple of guys in the front of half of the third round took a couple of closers. So they started to go. Mason Miller went in the first half of the third round.
Yep.
But with all those closers going, I had Corbin Burns came to me at 13 in the third round. So I actually went that direction, knowing that I wouldn't get – I knew a couple of closers would go, but there were three or four still left. So I took Burns and I took Ryan Helsley in the fourth round. So I did get the closer. So it was Helsley or Iglesias, and I went a little bit younger, I think.
And you got my guy Pablo Lopez at either five or six, right?
I think five was Pablo Lopez. If you're gonna make me remember the whole thing, I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. But, yeah, Pablo Lopez was five. I knew I had to get another starter in there. Yeah. These 15-teamers are tough, though. Like, in the middle of the draft, I'm like, you know, I really need some offense. And I went offense three or four straight rounds, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I don't have any starting pitching. So it's just – and my league, there's not a lot that slipped through. Shane McClanahan went early. Someone was not on
We did talk about it earlier. He went between round 8 and 10 in every draft. Everyone did not miss it.
The problem is there's one or two people that weren't on it. And
yeah.
weren't on it. So it's tough. Yeah, there was it's just tough. Right in the middle of the draft too. I can't remember it quite that bad with a guy.
Well, I keep going back. There was something you mentioned. It was a couple years ago. I mentioned listening to your Sunday night show, and it was when you guys went to a break, and you went back, and some news. I can't remember who it was now, but I remember you talking about.
It was John Lackey, and I flipped my phone at Jeff.
It's like brainwashed in my brain.
You might want another starter, and I was like, I hope it doesn't come off like badly, but I was just trying to help him out. But it was
what was crazy today is most news came out early. Like even the McClanahan got at least 15 minutes early.
Yeah.
The Vinny P news today is going to be interesting. Like that one, that like literally right before we started this segment, I saw it. I'm like, oh no, that's one that could come back to haunt, but we'll see.
That was a target for me too. I didn't get him. He went. No, Masato took him. Who you guys just talked to? Yep. But I like it. I like that. But beautiful. So yeah, that came after he was picked in every draft. But man, there's nothing worse than being a high-stakes draft, and before you walk out, someone gets hurt.
Yeah, it's just nothing, and there's nothing you can do about it. But
no.
I wanted to kind of reiterate on something you were saying, or get your thoughts on it. So you mentioned it's tough. Like you start taking your hitters, and you want to take pitchers because you don't want to miss out. Basically, you don't want to miss out on stats. That's what it comes down to. And one thing Ryan says, and a lot of people say, is when you leave a 15, you're going to kind of be weak somewhere.
Yep.
There's no way around that.
Yep.
So where do you think you're your weakest, and did you go in planning on being weakest at that
situation? Yeah, I'm more of a kind of go with the flow, and I'm usually a – want to get the best players in the first five or six rounds and then kind of just adjust to my team. But I'm weak at like pitcher 5, 6, 7 right in there. I kind of waited a while for my fifth one because I felt my offense needed a little help. So I took four straight hitters. But you're right. You got to be in these 15 teamers with good players. You're going to be weak somewhere. It's almost impossible not to be. If you do, you fell into a perfect draft, and that never happens over here. But like 12 teamers, you feel pretty good in every position. But I think here you're either short speed or you're short starters. But I'm going to have to my focus the first few weeks is kind of maybe emerging starters, guys who fall into jobs, something like that. David Fest in Minnesota didn't go, so like if he falls into a job, Zebby Matthews did. So I like both those guys, but without jobs, it's hard for me to take him at that point. I grabbed Garrett Willock in the 30th round just because the first week is four games, so I figure I probably may not have a ninth pitcher, so maybe just get three innings out of Whitlock, try and vulture a win or something. But kind of depth in starting pitching is probably my issue, and I got to focus on that right away.
And that's what's really crazy about any draft, but watching these rooms unfold, like you obviously can't because you're in a room, but we're hopping around. And you mentioned Festa. Festa went like around 26 and 27 in a couple. It doesn't even go drafted in yours, which is wild to me. Like,
yeah, the funny part is we got three drafts in a room. You can hear names go and people – the echo of the names, like it's amazing how many times someone took him next to us and then to the draft, took in our draft too. So it was, it's fun.
A little bit less so this year because we were somewhat split up. There were usually eight
drafts in a room. It's pure chaos.
Yeah,
but it was fun. It's always a good time. It's one of the better days of the year, so it's fun.
Absolutely. Heading back today?
Heading back today. We're driving back. Me and Jeff Erickson are going to be listening to the RotoWire podcast. We're driving back. So,
it's our favorite.
Vlad's going back with Chef Mike, so they're splitting up cars. So lives close to each other, so they're gonna. Vlad drove out with us, and he's gonna drive back with Mike. So
All right, man. We'll let you go. Safe travels back to SoCal. Absolutely.
Thanks. All right. Next guest joining us, fresh off his main. Looks like he's just, you know, just got out of the spa, relaxed, no pressure. The one and only Jeff Erickson. Jeff, how'd everything go?
Is that relaxed that I was looking? I felt like I felt beaten up is more like it there. Tough room. Very tough room and a tough spot to be drafted in that room. I was drafted 15th. Phil Dussault, Casey Chaw, Jenny Butler, many others that are very much better at me than me at this. I'm tired. I'm hurting. But I don't know. We'll see. I don't know.
And you were not to name name. You were in the massage draft. Is that correct or no?
Yeah, Griffin. Griffin okay. Banger is another one of the good players. He was getting the massage.
You were
yes.
in the massage draft. That was the highlight of mine. I was what is going on?
I was also very jealous of that. I have definite FOMO there.
Yeah. Pro move. So we're just talking to Jenstad. He started hitter at 13. I mean, was that your start as well?
Yeah, unless skis or scooble drops, then we'll talk. But they never drop. So.
I saw them going some leagues top 5, 6, 7. Those guys
it was like
got pushed
8
up.
And 10, I think, in ours, something like that.
And you were in crochet territory almost. And looking at some of the other draft boards, crochet was getting pushed. I guess you probably haven't seen many of the other drafts yet.
Yeah.
But we got some first round crochet and then early second round.
I could see it.
Yeah. We're talking a little about the end game as well. So like rounds like 20 through 30. If you want to say you picked whatever, but like what were some of the better picks after 20 that like a lot of listeners fab wise Sunday night may be looking at?
Let me see who I took.
Hey, I was tweeting
picks. So.
I black out during me. You were live tweeting your picks?
Yeah, well, I was at 15. I had time.
Man of the people over here, Jeff Erickson, everybody.
Every once in a while. you know, a lot of times you're filling needs. Yep. We did a weird thing where I haven't drafted at Francisco Alvarez all year, and I didn't have a second catcher at the 23-24 turn. So I took Trevino in the last round just while Stevenson's out. So that's one thing I did. Others that I kind of did in there, I got the free win out of Landon Knack.
There you go.
I did that in 25. Boring ass Ryan McMahon is my corner. Gavin Lux is my middle.
Loving this team already.
Cromulent Eric Fetty as a pitcher. Rocchio is my backup middle in case Lux doesn't play. McGreevy and Hart, those are the others.
I heard you throw McGreevy out. I love that pick. Like we're in a different room when McGreevy got thrown out. Ryan's like, who am I? He's the sixth starter for the Cardinals for now. Should be the fourth or fifth in reality, but he's going to get plenty of run. He might actually start the other Orvio sixth man. You got that too.
Anytime you can get two Cardinal starters, just do it, guys.
What could go wrong? Well, with Sonny Gray getting injections in his forearm, he might get McGreevy sooner than later.
That was a stay away for me for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. To your point about the Landon Knack, we were curious about it. We saw in I don't think it was your draft, but one room where, like all the players, Vesia, Knack, Birdie, they all went like boom, 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 like a domino effect. That was interesting. But to your Alvarez, I wanted to mention that because watching an auction yesterday, I saw Francisco go for like $3, and I'm sitting there going, okay, that's actually not a bad deal in a 15, because like if you're optimistic, this is a former, you know what, $15 guy, early pick for you to back him up with Trevino, who will play for 3-4 weeks. In Great American, like I love the strategy there. Like you said, it's the first time doing it. Easy drop later. I think that's in a 12 I would never do, and a 15 is very interesting to me.
You know, the whole thing is I was saying all along, like I don't want to carry three cashers, and then I do it in the main event, my biggest, most important draft. So what a hypocrite I am.
When did you find out about McClanahan?
Right before the draft.
That was right before the draft.
Before the draft, and I think you went in the 9th round in ours.
Yeah.
Jared Jones went in the 13th in ours. That was a jaw dropper for me.
Yep. All right, man. Well, you got anything else, Bubba?
One more question. I walked up and talked to you during the draft, but I wanted to mention it. And we talked about it on the first half of our show. Jackson Trujillo is a first-round talent, thank God, because he took him at pick 15. He could have been that guy that says, no, I want to keep him a second rounder and flip it. But are we high on Jackson, or is it because you're hoping one of the other outfielders fell for you?
My rankings are public. I've got him at like 12 or 13, I think. Wanted him. The debate for me was Alvarez versus Tatis. And I'm warming up to Tatis. A lot of smart people are taking him, but I have him like 27 in my ranks. And so
Jenstad just took him second round at 13 coming back. So
Phil, I gifted Phil Dussault Tatis at 13.
How nice of you.
So if he wins, blame me.
Okay. thanks for joining us, Jeff. This is Vegas coming off Tout Wars, so we know you're beat. Safe travel.
All right, we'll keep it in the RotoWire family here. We went from Scott Jensted to Jeff Erickson, and around the corner comes James Anderson, you know, lead prospect writer for RotoWire, and coming off a busy day of auctioning and then a main event on Saturday, partnering up with Todd Whitestone and everything. So how are we feeling? All things are done. Looks like you're just online from here out, I think, but how are we feeling?
It was a really fun few days of high-stakes auctioning and the main event here to cap it off on Saturday, and it was just incredibly challenging but incredibly fun. You know, everyone's so sharp, like lots of closers that I never thought would be going in the fourth round today. We ended up getting Aaron Judge with the sixth event today, which was crazy.
And we were planning on Carroll, right? Because we were talking at your break, and Carroll went third in your draft. Right. So
and
it's just
we were really relaxed going in about the idea of getting Carroll at six, and we weren't really sweating that at all. And he didn't even get close to six.
Yeah. What about someone? So I saw your first round break, but like in. What were some of the like round 20, 30? Because we're talking about Fab for Sunday night for listeners that are trying to prep some of these late risers. What were some of those? I mean, either you took them or didn't, guys you were looking at the end.
So we grabbed, I mean, I've been getting Caleb Durbin like with my, I've been getting Caleb Durbin with really late picks in every high stakes league this week. Jordan Beck, I've gotten in a bunch of them. We took Ben Rice today. I like Zach DiCenzo as like another option at first base if that's something you want. We were really chasing upside with the late pitchers, so like Joe Boyle, you know, he's a guy that we could easily be cutting, but he's looked great in camp. I think Zebby Matthews and Bubba Chandler are both going to be up pretty quickly and both have really high ceilings, so we took those guys as well. So there's a sprinkling of our late round.
I love how he says sprinkling of his late round. I watched his auction. That sounds like the late round in his auction. So like you got your boys, which is great to hear. And
I did get sniped on Hayden Birdsong in the main.
Oh
today,
no! Yeah, that news of Harrison getting sent to AAA. That because I made a note here. Birdsong, he's basically getting drafted around Bubba Chandler and Casey Mize in almost every draft right now. So that was a big jump.
Yeah, and we. You know, we settled on Bubba Chandler after getting.
It's not a bad settle.
But I mean, I much prefer. I think Birdsong's in the rotation for like 150 innings this year if he stays healthy. And I mean, you know how good he's looked this spring and how good he even looked at times last year. And I just think he's my favorite late round pitching target right now.
Great to hear. Well, we'll let you get running. You probably want to go take a little breather, James, so thanks a ton. All right, we're back. We've gone RotoWire. We're going to the overall Champions League number one guy out there. He did the Champions League on Friday, did the main event here on Saturday, the one, the only, Dustin McComas. How things going, my man?
Well, they're done. So we'll see if the plans were good plans in about a couple months. But it's a great feeling to be done. It's a blast. Just seeing everybody, seeing all the community, and also participating in the first ever Champions League auction was just my first, like we talked about above, but my first live auction ever.
Yeah.
My head was spinning. Found my footing there. Had my plan. Got some money off the books. But you guys were in the room. Like, there was people were locked in, you know? It's like you could hear a pin drop at sometimes, but so much fun. The main felt like a breeze after doing an auction with those guys.
That's two things, and then I'll give it to Bloom. It's funny because I felt that way after I do my OLAX, and then I get into a snake draft. We talked about it, like, dude, when I was a snake draft, like, just riding a bike again. It's like, there we go, do our thing. But to your point about the auction in there, I thought it was very, very interesting because for the Champions League. Is so you mentioned on my show and on James' show and stuff is you've done one OLAC before your first ever auction.
Mm-hmm.
Leahy, who picks 15th, Matt Leahy, I believe, so the same thing. I talked to two other guys at least today, maybe three now. Two had never done an auction, period. Another one similar to you, just did it online. So it was really cool to see 15 people in there. You mentioned like locked in, but you had like the vets, with like the Tobys, the Magers, all the guys in there. But then you have the new guys basically. So it was a cool mix, and it flowed really well, I thought.
Yeah, it flowed really well, and I was actually talking to Phil DeSoto about it afterward, and I hear people talk about sometimes, like, oh, I pay attention to how people are bidding or the guys are nominating. And I was like, I looked up and, like, I feel like everybody was so locked into their individual plans that they weren't even really paying attention to if there is any game theory about who I nominate or that sort of thing. So by the end of it, I was kind of getting a feel for how guys were bidding and you know, how they're nominating and stuff like that. But that to me was so unique, is that, like, you could not prep for that auction. Like, even the guys that have been in so many auctions before, they usually draft the same kind of guys. They have a feel for how it goes. Like, with this sort of auction, you just didn't know how to prep for it. So that added a whole new layer. And, you know, it was, like, fun to see people wanting to get some money spent and all that sort of stuff and then kind of find their footing from there. But it was a great time.
How nervous? So you had the first throw.
Yeah.
And like you said, it was intense in there. The auctioneer to kind of basically said there were, I think, maybe 15 or 20 of us, just to kind of set the scene for people listening, like standing behind all of you guys in a shoe. And he was like, you guys need to stay silent or else you're out, because this is a big deal. And then so we go through that whole spiel, and then they're like, Dustin, you got the first throw. And it's like, I mean, what was the heart rate?
Well, it's funny. My Apple Watch a couple times buzzed me.
You can quantify this.
My Apple Watch buzzed me and said your heart rate's over 120 beats per minute, but you're not moving, you know? And I was like, I felt
you are having a heart attack.
I felt that nervous. Like, are you okay? Is this life alert? Like, are you having a stroke? Like, it happened a couple times during the draft, and it's like, you know what? We are athletes, all right? We are athletes. This is our arena. The heart rate gets going. But I overanalyzed way too much the first nomination. I was going to galaxy brain it. I was like, I'm going to throw a catcher out there. I'm going to throw a reliever out there to see how everybody treats that. I was like, you know what? I'm going to throw Otani out there. Let's get some money out of there and get some money spent. If I want to bid on him, I can, that sort of deal. But, yeah, there were a couple times in draft I looked down. My Apple Watch was buzzing me because my heart rate was that fast. And they were like, you're clearly sitting down, and your heart rate is like you're running a marathon right now.
That's absolutely amazing. Like, just – I didn't even know that part. That is so darn funny. Okay, so to talk about the main event here on Saturday, I think you're around pick, what, six? Seven?
Six, yeah.
I was sitting next to talking to you. How does this team compare, I guess, to your auction teams? That's the beauty of an auction. You can build it so many different ways. You can get three first-round picks if you want, so on and so forth. A snake, we kind of know how things go for the most part.
Right.
So how do you, like, compare? So, like, when you left both rooms now, how do you feel about the two?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, obviously, you can kind of target more guys in certain areas that you wouldn't ever have access to in the snake draft. I think my base plan was kind of the same. Be strong at catcher. Get an ace. Be strong at closer, if you can get a shortstop. But for me, the auction, the way it played out was Lindor was kind of a key target for me, just because where I was seeing where he was going to go price-wise, and I thought a lot of people would have had that mid-tier of shortstops kind of pushed up potentially, like your Mason Wynns, your Dansby Swansons, your Jeremy Peñas, that sort of deal. I was like, I want to get a Lindor, lock in those stats. And like, I wanted Tay Oscar and I wanted Lawrence Butler. And I think I was telling you guys afterwards, I ended up kind of price enforcing on Jaren Duran a little bit for $27 and getting
ended
him.
Up with him. Yep.
But like the beauty of an auction is that like there's no scenario in a snake draft where you can realistically get Lindor, Duran, Butler, and Tay Oscar all on the same team. And then also be strong at catcher and then also have a Dylan Cease and an Emmanuel Class A. So it kind of gives you more freedom to kind of be strong where you want to be strong and then kind of be quote unquote weak where you want to be weak, where there's more depth. The one thing about the auctions I looked up, and it felt like everybody kind of had the same idea to wait on MI, wait on CI. Everybody in the room kind of knew there were some values there. Your Jonathan Indias, your Gleyber Torreses of the world, those first basemen that are going to play every day. But, yeah, that was the difference in the auctions that you just had. You could be stronger in certain areas, whereas you can't in the snake draft just gobble up all those guys in certain positions because you just don't have access to them.
To that point, we asked Scott Genstead, the same thing. Every 15 you do, leave weak. So where were you okay leaving weak? You know, the strength of your in season, because as we move to season, we need fab, we need this, so you know where you can adjust
that
kind of stuff.
I wanted to be weak by design at first base and corner infield. I just felt like I was totally okay with Nathaniel Lowe, Nolan Chanwell, Josh Bell, Carlos Santana, guys that are going to play every day. They're going to be in a good lineup position. You know, with Chanwell, maybe get a little bit more batting average and speed if you need that. Santana and Bell, maybe get a little bit more pop. Third base, I knew I was okay with like a Ryan McMahon or a Joey Ortiz, like whoever was kind of left, even if it was like Ke'Bryan Hayes, like I'm okay. Like they're going to play every day. And it's like every time I kept doing values on SGP and stuff, it kept saying that like there's so many third basemen that are values by like 70 or 80 picks from a snake draft standpoint. So I was totally okay with that. And the way I draft pitching is I want an ace. I want a couple of mid-tier guys I think have some upside. And then I'm totally okay with just like taking a bunch of shots for an auction standpoint. There's $2 and $3 guys. I wanted to have some money to be able to bid, you know, on a Tyler McGill or a David Peterson or Michael Soroka or Casey Mize. I didn't get Casey Mize. I got him in the main. But guys like that, it's like I knew I want to take a lot of shots on these guys because if one of them hits, it's a huge value. If two of them hits, it can totally change your team. So I was okay being weak in those areas for sure. I did not want to be weak at catcher. I did not want to be weak at closer. I'm terrible at fabbing saves. It drives me nuts. It's such a peace of mind to not have to waste money and time on that every single week.
Last off the wall question. I see the hat. I get it. Mm-hmm. Austin, UT guy. What's with the we're rocking the Mets Manaea.
I've got the Sean Manaea
jersey. We're rocking the Mets Manaea shirt. So what's going on
so
there?
So last year he was a core target for me. I had him on all three CLQ teams, and it was just an amazing return on the investment. The moment the season ended, I went on to Fanatics. And the Sean Manaea jersey was on sale, and I bought it instantly. It's like, I'm going to wear this to the main. I'm going to honor Sean Manaea. Hopefully I get some good luck from, you know, showing some love to the guy that helped me on three. He helped me on three CLQ teams. Hopefully he's on the Mets. Yeah, I was like, he's a free agent. Like, I could have waited 3 months if he signed with a different team and get this for $50 instead of $100. I was coming down from the elevator, and a couple of Phillies fans in the elevator were like, oh, boo, the Mets, man, the Mets suck. I'm like, hold on. And I'm like going through this detailed story, and these guys are probably like, what in the hell is this guy talking about? A fantasy draft and a Manaea jersey, CLQ? But I'm like, I'm into it, man. I'm in the zone. I'm going down to my main. So I had to honor Sean Manaea, and I had to rep Austin, Texas, too. So that was the plan. It's the only outfit I planned the entire week.
Well, that's absolutely outstanding. I know you have slot machines to go protect, I was told last time we talked. I appreciate your time. We appreciate your time. Good luck this season.
I appreciate y'all, man. Y'all do amazing work, and it's great seeing y'all out here in Vegas, and thanks for having me.
Awesome, man. Thanks again. All right, we're back, and we are joined by a legend. Some may say one of the biggest East Coast meatballs we will find. He has the Pull Hitter Patreon, of course, Pull Hitter Podcast, all the good stuff. He is the one, the only member of the Garrett Crochet First Round Club, the one and only Bobby D. Rob, DPHR. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing awesome, man. Thank you guys for having me. Good to see you guys here in Vegas, too, doing this. I'm excited, man. It's the best week for drafting. And I am a part of the Garrett Crochet First Round Club. I thought I was going to be maybe 50% of the club. I'm the only guy. I'm shocked at that.
I think so. I mean, there was a bunch of Crochet early second round, so it wasn't, I don't know, that crazy. But first, before your main or whatever, how was broadcasting the Champions League draft Friday night?
It was interesting. Because
you guys had a little, I saw Greg Martin come in and, like, take a laptop and try and show some video and see that.
Yeah, we made some notes for, like, what we could do better next year.
Okay.
Or at least what I know to ask for next year to have a better experience. I think like bringing them some sort of, bringing the audience some sort of audio to hear like people bidding would be cool.
Yep.
Some whatever, a camera, I don't know. But it was great. Everyone was having a great time in the podcast room. So I don't know if anyone even heard me talking, but it was fun.
I think this is our podcast and your podcast. We're the only ones. Podcasts don't happen at the NFBC, like at Vegas. I mean, probably for good reason. People are wanting to have a good time, that sort of thing. But I feel like, I don't know, this is the first year we're actually just trying. Like, we're sitting in a hallway here just talking, grabbing people who are coming by. And you're trying new things, trying to broadcast the thing. So, I don't know. Try it. See what you can improve and fix it for next year.
Get feedback, do different things next year. I'm excited. I'm glad you guys are doing it, too.
All right, let's get to the important stuff, though, the draft. First off, before we get out, how many more you got?
I have a main event Monday.
Okay.
And that's it.
No more auctions, nothing. You're done.
Main event Monday. Auction. Did two auctions already, and those are over with.
Sweet. Okay. So then the question is, you had your plan. We kind of talked in between one of the breaks, like when I told you about the Crochet, and you're worried about the pitcher run, which we see, and yours was like the least aggressive of the rooms, but it made sense. We talked about that. So then you obviously took the crochet, you got your big bat in round two you wanted, but how'd things keep going from there? Because I know you and I know Toby very well. You have your little group with Phil and Steve, like really tight groups. So you have your plans, because I was laughing with Toby after the champions, watching him and Steve do the auction. Like, Toby would look at Steve when he'd outbid him at times, just like, dude, we're the same guys. Like, what the hell? So you have your plan. You do your work, all that kind of stuff. How did that continue on after you got your crochet?
Oh, it was good. I mean, second round, I went Mookie Betts. I wanted some diversification. I know a lot of people are a little afraid of the mystery illness. You know, I didn't follow the Dr. Dave model. He has a new model out called Immunization Plus. Yeah. He compared Mookie Betts to Kyber Ruiz, and I just told him in the hallway, you know, that it's really embarrassing. You're comparing one of the best athletes in the world to a dud catcher. So
I forget.
You know, I don't know. I just think Mookie falling in the second round, you get a piece of the Dodger offense, you get some multi-eligibility. Some of the power stuff dipped down last year, but he's so good at lifting and pulling, and he's going to get 100 runs if he's ready to play. So then I took a little Acuna in the third round. Sorry, good run.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I did Acuna in the third. In my projection sheet, I brought him down to like 510 plate appearances. I even shaved off stolen bases. I actually something I fudged with for the first time. Like not the first time, but I don't normally like to do the actual numbers.
Yeah.
Just see what the per plate appearance is. But it was still high for him, like 38. So I brought him down to 25. Even knocked off some hits to give him like a 280 average. He was still playing with 38, you know. And I was like, okay, well, if that's the floor, let me get some of it. And then getting Devers in the fourth round. I feel like I may have the 2019 All-Star.
That's a fourth round Devers. I wasn't looking at Devers on boards today, but I don't know. That seems late. I like that. Really? Yeah. So that's one of the fallers. Okay. Were you part of Closer Madness?
I wasn't. Okay.
You waited.
So a little bit of a strategy diversification look ahead. I know in my CLQ on Monday, I'm going to probably look to have a little bit more security, get to like better closers. Wasn't part of that first run because I jumped back in on Tanner Bibee, where I wanted to maybe take Munoz, but I got Hoffman on the way back. And then I waited. I speculated. Every time I had an opportunity to take a guy, Chapman, I just thought the price is too rich a little bit like right now. But Chapman, he's rising. Jansen got pushed up. Bednar, I have in several like high stakes leagues already, so I didn't want too much of that. And I just made a decision like around 12. Like, you know what? I'm just going to wait. I have like my guys I like at the end, you know, my specs. And I just threw a shot at three darts at the end. And I hope one of them stick. So just a little switch up from my normal game plan.
And it makes sense for someone that, again, I said it before, you do so much work on knowing the player pool, knowing the flow. You study your ADPs, you study your AAVs, whatever. Like, you know all that. So you know how to adjust. You put crazy time in for FAB. So I guess if there is a position to FAB, you're going to be at least on the radar for that, which makes sense. I like how you did mention for your CLQ, you'll probably go back to being a little like, let's get the dudes.
Safe.
You get the dudes in that one, which makes sense as well. Something we've been asking a lot of guys, because when we were sitting there watching I call it round three, 20 through 20, 21 through 30, basically, because there's a break after every 10 rounds. You see just a lot of dudes that if you drafted 2-3 weeks ago or earlier, they're all on the waiver wire probably. Like, majority of them are on the waiver wire. What was your philosophy in those, like, 10 rounds? Like, did you have a set target? Were you looking for specs? Were you streaming? Like, how did you kind of approach that? Because if we're going to bring this out hopefully tonight or tomorrow, listeners have FAB coming up. So these are guys that are going to be important.
Yeah. So you mean looking at FAB 2 for this week already? Or
no. Approached those last 10 rounds, like, what were your kind of game plans in there?
Yeah. So when I knew that I was going to spec on closers, like, I wrote down, like, my last 10 picks, last 7 picks actually, like to map out, and just I knew I had 3 RPs, so I just worked backward. I just was trying to like work backwards to what I want in the, you know, from the start of 20. I got sniped right beforehand on like guys I was ready to set mins for. Victor Scott, CES.
When did Victor Scott go? Do you like roughly? Was it like mid-teens rounds?
It was.
Because we were talking about him earlier.
Scott
He's been
Fleming.
Going like 16th, 17th ish. Yes. Round in some of these.
Scott Fleming took him in the 17th.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but I had clear targets. I had Ben Rice as a clear target. My closer specs, the starting pitchers, I've been just trying to make sure I get 10 before, like, the deep end, because I know there's, like, other guys I like around then, and then the starting pitchers kind of dried up, and it's just gotten pushed up. So, you know, just trying to, like, stay ahead of the curve with that.
All right, before Ryan asks another question, I had a quick one, because we just mentioned, like, oh, Victor Scott around 16, 17. You said around 17. We've talked about a bunch of players. There's, like, a bubble. I find it fascinating because a lot of shows all talk about how ADP goes out the window in main events.
Right.
We walk into a place where 8 drafts start at the same time. It's not online. You can maybe hear it throughout the room, but you really don't know what's going on. They're still going in the same pockets, yeah, even though ADP does. So that's pretty wild. So in theory, you can kind of plan in a roundabout way.
Yeah, yeah. And then actually in the last 10 rounds, you know, just with the news of Vinny P getting hurt, I took a shot with Jack Aguinone in round 29.
Okay. So you did find out about Vinny P during the middle of the draft.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's RotoWire, and it's just on an instant refresh with me.
Yep.
Panic.
I mean, this is why you do it. Today was Exhibit A.
And maybe it's a quick reaction. You know, I thought about it, processed it for like a couple of minutes, and I was thinking, you know, last year Vinny P missed some time, and Sal P went there, you know, for me and get some extra PT. And then he just obviously got Marcana, not for this reason, but he just recently went there. So practically I'm thinking Caglione's probably not going to be the thing, but what if they decide like that's the route? If Vinny P's even out, I have no idea. Yeah. But also now he's in the player pool, right? So if we do think he's coming up midway through the season, we have a chance to like scoop him back up on the cheap. I can anticipate that. So I reacted quick on that, but it's like, it's great to just react off of news. I think I'm at my best when I'm just impulsive and I have less time to think about it. So I love that quick reaction on news.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Rob DiPietro.
Yeah, man.
Come a long way from the early Baseball HQ days when we were doing online first pitch. Now we're sitting here in Vegas with each other. So
Ryan
appreciate
remembers
it.
Me as the kid who fucking asked way too many questions. You're like, what's with this DiPietro kid? Like, I'll answer your question again, guy. But I appreciate that, though, because you know, I think you set the tone for me, at least, to reciprocate that to people, you know, when they reach out, you know, and just to remember how I was treated. So I appreciate that, man. You guys do an excellent job and keep it going, man.
Pull Hitter Podcast, Pull Hitter Patreon. I am a subscriber to it and can fully vouch for what Rob does and the work he does. So everyone check him out. Thanks, Rob.
All right, we're back with our next guest here after the main event. He's always got a smile on his face. Who am I kidding? Ever since I've known this guy, meeting him in Arizona, having him on the show. Great dude. Some call him Swervy, Steve-O Swerve, you name it. But Steve Goodwin, how are we doing, man? How are things going? Main event's in the books.
We're doing great, man. It's been awesome out in Las Vegas, and you know, best time of the year. And now I'm just ready for the baseball season to start up.
For sure, man. We chatted briefly in one of your breaks. Some people say like there's leagues of death and stuff. Like there's tough rooms everywhere. Your room had some heavy hitters that was. And to me, I guess it's heavy younger hitters is what it felt like. It was kind of like people might get wrong. It was like our group, our age of people out that table, which is kind of cool to see. So how do you think things wound up? Because you're happy with the way things were going, but that was like the midpoint, basically.
Yeah, so I thought it was a really good draft for me. It was my CLQ main event. So, you know, I was getting my guys, but I really like how it started. And I feel like, you know, you got to adapt to how the draft comes to you. But I feel like my plan and how it went, you know, I'm really happy. I mean, I'm usually pretty confident coming out, but I think that, you know, I attacked and did what I wanted to.
So like, so you and going back to your podcast that you were on with Bubba, Bench with Bubba, a month or so ago, whatever. You do a lot of analysis as to what the best players in these overalls did last year. Like, what did they do fab wise? What did they do? And you kind of drew some conclusions. And you know, there's give and takes certain places, but like based on what you found, what the best players did last year in season, like does that affect how you actually draft a team?
So I do, like you said, I do like to go back and see the builds and the roster construction, how teams are building. I think you gotta realize too that like every year is different, right? You can't just do what happened last year. But I do like the way that I build my teams is I usually do have a more hitting heavy start. This year I've kind of adapted getting more aces too. But yeah, I try to like – I wouldn't say I just take what Phil DeSoto and Clark Olson do exactly. I play my game, but I definitely can take things out of it. And what kind of starters are they taking? Are they getting those frontline aces? Where are they getting their closers? So You know, I took Rocio Iglesias in the fourth round today. I really wanted to get one of those top guys. That's like something I'm really trying to do this year.
No, I love the way you phrased that. It's like, it's why I love having guests like you and other people on Bench with Bubba is it's, we can all learn from each other. Like, we don't have to, like, mimic them. Like, yes, Posma's a Hall of Famer. We know who he is. But, like, I was in a D.C., and he immediately goes, I want to see his draft board. Because it's like curiosity. Like, who are guys taking? And then you uncover the why. Like, start looking for the why. So you stick with your strategy, but at the same time, like, okay, successful players are doing certain things. Why? I think that's an important part. And we'll kind of elaborate more on that. So, like, you have your website going now, and it goes back to some features, but you're going to do things this year also to kind of track those things. What should, like, listeners expect when they're going through that? It's raw. It's in the making. You've already mentioned here, like, you're going to try to do other things, this, that. What should we kind of be digging into there?
Thanks a lot, Bubba. It means a lot that people have been checking it out. And, you know, what I'm trying to do is help the everyday NFBC player learn and understand our game. So I'm basically taking all this NFBC data that's on the public site, and I'm reimagining how we look at it, visualizing your teams. I have these radar charts that can visualize where your categories are, and immediately you can see where your percentiles are. Now in April, things are so fluid, and you know, you things are going to change rapidly. But when you get into July and August, September, the shape of your team really starts to solidify. And I think, and then with it, I have the FAB data all in one place, you know, all collected. Like, if you're in a league and you're in second place, you can look at the team above you and see where's the first place team weaknesses. What is he doing with FAB? Has he only been making bids less than $30 all season long? There's some useful information, but again, it's just another tool in the books to help people play the game. So yeah, like you said, Bubba, it's a work in progress. I'm having fun with it. And this year's a trial run. And, you know, I love this game, as everybody knows. And I'm just trying to do some fun things for everybody.
So two-parter, are you planning to update the site in season? And to, like, as people are in these either main event or online championship, they can kind of see it as they go for the season? And then what is the website? I know it's pronounced Fantasy, but it's spelled differently.
Correct. So I'll start with the name. It's fantasy.io, but it's got a little twist on the name. That's PHANTASEA, like C as in ocean. So it's got the PH instead of the F, and it's got the SEA instead of the Y. So, and then it's .io. So I really like the name. I think it's creative. But like you said, the in-season stuff, yes. Right now I'm committing to putting on Monday mornings updates every single week. So on Monday mornings, you'll be able to see the live shape of your team. Now, if it's going well, I'm also going to try to do Friday mornings and Sunday mornings, because in the NFBC, those three mornings are like, you know, those are the important days when you're really making decisions. So I'm going to do my best. Again, not everything's complete. There's some stuff in the back end that I'm still working through, but I'm trying to help people, right? And I think it's going to be cool. So, yes, there are going to be live updates in season.
That's pretty sweet. Definitely another tool we can use to better our teams potentially. So that's definitely a thing. Back to your draft. We're going to bring it full circle here. The later rounds, we've kind of been asking all guys this. It's, you know, if you drafted a while back, these are free agents. These are FAB targets. These are maybe spec guys you're hoping for, stashes, whatever. How did you approach the last 10 rounds of your draft? And were there any main targets you definitely got that you wanted as you were there?
So on my teams, and this goes back to me playing my game, I like to carry a lot of starters on my team. So usually I'm using at least 4 or 5 spots on my 7-man bench for starters, because I want to have options every week to play the matchups and get good two starts when I can. So towards the ends of my drafts, I'm kind of building that depth out in the starters while also getting that extra outfielder or, you know, those final 15th, 16th bats for the 14-man hitting lineup that are going to help me go into the season. So not every team's different, right? If I went middle infield heavy at the top, but I'm light on outfield 4 or 5, I might need an outfield 6. But it all different. If I'm heavy on outfield, I might need an extra infielder down the road.
Makes sense, man. Steve, appreciate it.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. Anyone who hasn't come out to Vegas, like, it's an amazing experience. Yes. And
was this, how many years have you been out here?
So last year was my first year coming, so this is year two. Yep. I think I'll be coming every year. So, and Bubba and Ryan, it's been awesome to hang with you guys, and I'm sure I'll be seeing you again this weekend.
Absolutely, man. Safe travels home.
Thanks.
All righty. Thank you to Steve O'Swerve and the handful of other guests we had, Ryan. That was fun. Like, we got the breakfast going here on a Saturday. Got a little recaps of Friday kind of mixed in there. Got to talk to a lot of people. Gave our thoughts on it. It was a whole whirlwind of the main event. So thoughts on this one?
Whirlwind is probably the right word. I am beat. Not only will Vegas do that to you, but just kind of for me, socializing for this long has been awesome. But no, thank you to everyone who came on. And honestly, all of our listeners out there, like, this has been really, not to sound like whatever, but like, we just heard from a lot of folks out here in Vegas that we don't know, who, you know, listened to the show and came up to us and said hi and that sort of thing. So we really appreciate that. That gives us kind of the juice, the mojo to keep doing this thing and keep having fun. Thank you to Greg and Jeff at the NFBC for all their support making this happen, with not only this but listener leagues and that sort of thing too. So whirlwind of a day, ton of fun just meeting everybody. Can't recommend this trip enough for anyone on the fence about coming out to Vegas. It's been really cool, bunch of cool people that we meet, and it's been a pleasure, my friend.
It has been, and weirdly enough, it's kind of only just begun, my friend. So I echo everything Ryan said. It's been really, really great to meet so many people that, you know, Ryan and I just kind of sometimes think we talk into the void, and to listen to people and kind of the thanks and everything else, it doesn't go unnoticed. Let's put it that way. So we appreciate that. We appreciate the NFBC. It's been awesome. We still have another day out here. We got some draft to do on Sunday.
We got a 9:15 dinner reservation tonight, which blows my mind. Usually I'm in bed. If I'm not recording, I'm usually in bed by 9 o'clock. So we'll see how that goes. And then we've got our listener league, de facto listener league in person Vegas draft Sunday 11:30. We're drafting next to each other. We're at 11 and 12, which is pretty damn funny.
I think it sounds amazing.
Amazing something. You've got me boxed in at the wheel, so I don't know. We may do something with that, but in terms of like official shows for Vegas, we will probably call this one a wrap. And again, thank everyone who joined us, who facilitated this, and of course all you listeners out there. We really appreciate it.
Yep, we appreciate it. More stuff like this to come, hopefully. Ryan and I are thoroughly enjoying this, so we'll continue to brainstorm and see where this goes.
Cheers.
All right, see y'all. Thanks.